We're 2 Timothy chapter 3. Don't confuse it with 1 Timothy chapter 3 because they're two opposites ends of the spectrum here. But look at 1 Timothy chapter 3 when you get a chance. You know this, Timothy, that in the last days there will be very difficult times. For people will love only themselves and their money. They will be boastful and proud, scoffing at God, disobedient to their parent, and ungrateful. They will consider nothing sacred. They will be unloving and unforgiving. They will slander others and have no self-control. They will be cruel and hate what is good. They will betray their friends, be reckless, be puffed up with pride, and love pleasure rather than God. They will act religious, but they will reject the power that could make them godly. Stay away from people like that. They are the kind that work their ways into people's homes and win confidence of vulnerable women who are burdened with guilt of sin and controlled by various desires. Such women are forever followed by new teaching, but they are never able to understand the truth. These teachers oppose the truth, just as Jannes and Jambres did oppose Moses. They have depraved minds and counterfeit faith, but they won't get away with this for long. Someday, everyone will recognize what fools they are, just as Jannes and Jambres.
In the 1980s, there was a movie called Urban Cowboy. And one of the songs that came out of that was Looking for Love in All the Wrong Places. Let me read you the first verse. Well, I've spent a lifetime looking for you. Singles bar and good time lovers were never true. Playing a fool's game, hoping to win, and telling those sweet lies and losing again. I was looking for love in all the wrong places. Looking for love in too many faces, searching their eyes and looking for traces of what I'm dreaming of. I thought that was kind of a neat introduction, even though we're not talking about today going into bars looking for a lover. But the whole idea of misplaced attention, of looking for something, fulfillment, or whatever you want to call it in our life, and looking for it in the wrong places. Paul tells Timothy, in the last days, there will be very difficult times. For people will love only themselves and their money. If that's not looking for love in all the wrong places, what is? If you read that text, and if you go back and read it later, you will see in there one of the things that Paul talks about is he talks about women who are burdened with the guilt of sin and controlled by various desires. You can really see a culturally driven point of view in what Paul says there. So don't be put off by that, but just think about what the general message is that he's trying to get across. When God created us, he set us in a place where all our needs would be perfectly met. It was a place of perfect contentment, and every need was met before it was even recognized. Before human beings even thought about, am I happy, asked those sorts of existential questions. But they imagined that they could not get along without some of that fruit that was hanging in the corner of the garden. And that was the beginning of huge problems for humankind. You can call me crazy or whatever, but I got to thinking about Star Trek. There's this one episode in Star Trek in which there's a mirror universe. And there's this intersection of these two universes that look exactly the same. Except one is good and one is bad. And so there's the Kirk in the original universe that is noble and altruistic and wants the best for his crew. And then there's the Kirk, as I recall, he had a beard or something distinguishing about him, who was the antithesis of the Kirk in the first episode. And I think sometimes that's what we find ourselves in. We find ourselves in this mirror universe where we think that we're going to find what we're looking for in this other place. Last week, our sermon was called One Handful of Quietness from Ecclesiastes 4, in which the writer says, better to have one handful of quietness than two handfuls with hard work and chasing the wind. This is coming from the mouth of a man who had spent his life trying to find fulfillment. And he tried it in every way possible. He tried it in wine, women, and song. He tried it in creation of great parks and artistic things and that sort of thing. But the end of the book is, in his conclusion, none of that stuff worked. I didn't find what I was looking for. It's a life of being frantic, of striving, of being discontented and disconnected is where the mirror universe leads us. It's where Koheleth in Ecclesiastes takes us with his pursuit of meaning. I've often encountered this in my counseling career. It comes in the form of the frantic call to see me. I'm afraid our marriage is going to fail, they say. We really need to come in and see you. We really need some help in restoring this. Or something like, I don't know what to do with my life. It's so chaotic or confused or meaningless. I don't know what to do. And if indeed they come in, that always leads to me giving them the strong Campbell vocational interest blank and talking about personality and passion and where life could possibly lead you. But whatever the call is, these are always kind of panic, end of the rope kinds of phone calls. I'm also amazed in that context by the extent to which people will go to stop the chaos and pain. They will get pregnant because they think that that's going to somehow fix the marriage. Or they'll buy something really expensive, horribly expensive. If we just had a new house, or we just had a new car, or we just had a this, or we just had a that, then our marriage would be wonderful. Or life would be meaningful again. Or if I had a new job or a new town to live in, I would be happier. The irony in this is that you, the counselor, can say to them, I will show you a way to repair these things that you don't like in your life. I can show you. But it's going to take some discipline and some hard work in order to get there. And that's when most of them walk away. I think there's some irony in that. Anything but that, they say. They wouldn't say it to me because I don't have the degree work necessary to do this, but sometimes it's, can't you give me a pill? Can't you give me a this? Can't you give me a that? Isn't there something that I can buy that will make this all better? Can't you just fix me in some sort of painless way? Many, if not most people, do not know how to manage what Larry Crabb calls our longings. And I'm going to spend a little time talking about this. But these longings often lead us to look for love in all the wrong places. So in his book, Inside Out, Crabb says that human longings are threefold. He defines them as crucial, critical, and casual. But I want to start at the most central of these longings, and that is crucial longing. And so crucial longing is at the center of our being, at the center of our needs. These are the most profound and the most demanding of our longings. These must be met, underline must be met, in order for life to have purpose and direction and meaning. There is no way to ignore crucial longings. This longing was built into us from the beginning. One of the songs that I used to listen to on our Abba CD said, the hole in your soul must be rock and roll. Well, no, it's not. It's this. This is the hole. It's the desire for the one enduring relationship that brings peace and contentment to us. We all want that. We all long for that. It is what the Bible talks about when Jesus says, "My yoke is easy and my burden is light." Anything else you pick up is not going to be that way. You think it's going to be easier. You think it's going to make your life magically better. But in fact, it's really heavier and more difficult than my yoke. Jesus is talking to the woman at the well, and he says to her, "If you knew who was speaking to you, you would ask me, and I would give you living water." It's the crucial longing. It's the thing that we all want. Jesus said in John 6:48, "I am the bread of life. I'm the one who's able to fill your hunger. No one else can do that. Not even your husband and wife. I'm the one that does that." He says in John 8, "I am the light of the world." When you're confused, when you feel like you're wandering around in the darkness, I am the one that can illuminate things. This longing, if not satisfied, is the lack of which produces discontentment, wandering, foolish choices. Oh, have I seen some foolish choices? As people try to quell these voices and this discontent in their lives. And it also cannot be met through human relationships. Crucial longings are only met through my relationship with God. As you know, I mentioned last week, I'm reading through Jen Hatmaker's book, Seven. And so, Seven, she had decided with some of her friends that there were some things that she needed to pare down in her life. And so she picks seven things. The first is food. She talks about how much she's a foodie. She loves food. She loves every kind of food. And so for 1 month, she pares her diet down to seven items. And For a whole month, she eats those seven items and those alone. And now she's not going to do this her whole life. It's not a diet that she's going on, but she's kind of navigating her relationship with food and the role that it plays in her life. And then it's clothes comes up, and she starts thinning out her closet, and she talks about all of that. And there's always some reflection at the end of each chapter. Because each one of these seven items takes 1 month. And then she moves on to the next one. Kind of the background or the end, the conclusion of each one of those things is that this didn't make me feel any better to have this stuff. Clothes in my closet. Meaningless. The food that I think I've got to have, all the kinds of food, all the money I spent on these foods, didn't do it. The second longing is called critical longing. So it's the next circle. Critical longing is legitimate because it's quality human relationships. Quality human relationships. We want relationship. And we get it in a lot of different ways. We get it in marriage, of course. We get it in friendships. We get it in some ways that are not healthy. But kind of the bottom line is that we all want to be loved, don't we? We hope that our children will remain close to us and that they'll be happy because we believe that relationships at some level are important. I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on this, but I think if we allow relationships to get too large, relationships become a god. Do you know that? You can make the people in your life a god. It can be extended family. It could be expressed in a lot of different ways. And I think one of the competitions of the gospel is how do you get the gospel to worm its way into the life of people who are so preoccupied by their human relationships that they have no time or no longing for God in their life. And it happens. It happens all the time. The third longing is the easiest, and it's the casual. It's everything else. These can be trivial, from where we eat dinner to significant. I hope I get good medical results from the doctor. You know, they're all over the board in terms of their weight. Casual longing does not centrally involve what can only be supplied in relationship with another person. When casual longings fire off in our life, we experience manageable discomfort. Now, whether or not we manage it is another thing, but it's manageable. And it may be, boy, I'm so hungry for a donut, I don't know what to do. Or from that to, I have got to be with somebody. I feel so lonely right now. It can be all, or I'd like to have a drink of that. I can just taste it in my mouth. Manageable longings. And it often gets expressed in immediate gratification. One of my big criticisms of our times is that most people refuse to deny their drive for immediate gratification. people like my parents. And I think to a large degree, my generation learned that. And so my mother would put things on layaway. And she'd pay on them a little here and a little there. And one day she would pay it off. And she'd get to take it home. But not us. We say, oh, I'll just put that on my credit card. And we watch our money get out of hand. Crucial longing. Casual longing. We want it and we want it now, don't we? I was once doing premarital counseling for a couple in Texas. It was back in the 80s. They loved each other. There's no doubt in my mind about that, Ty and Kelly. But they had no discipline. And because of that, they got pregnant. And they were members of my church, and they asked me if I would do the wedding, and I said yes. I said, premarital counseling, okay. So I did my to them. One of the things I did in those days is I gave people the Myers-Briggs and just talked about the implications of the Myers-Briggs for their marriage. And we got down to the last scale in the Myers-Briggs, which is JP, and a J is somebody who is goal-directed and future-oriented and time-conscious, and that's pretty much me. Anal-retentive, you know, if they're extreme J's. And P's are very often, it depends on how far out you go, but out here way on the edge, undisciplined. Time? What time? Get lost in the process. Don't set future goals. And so Ty and Kelly were both P's, and I said to Ty and Kelly, you guys are going to have a problem. You're both P's. Who's going to balance your checkbook? Oh, it's going to be lovely. We love each other. Checkbook's going to be fine. 1 year almost to the day, Ty calls me, Bruce, we need to talk. Nobody's balancing the checkbook. And I think there's in that just this illustration of what it means to be somebody who's just kind of goes from hither to yon, who has no discipline, who doesn't think about the future, who allows these casual longings and the desire to quell them, to eat something or to drink something or to have a relationship with someone or whatever it takes in order to make that longing go away. In my years of counseling, I'm using counseling illustrations, but this applies broadly. I just want you to hear this as illustration. I've actually had two basic kinds of clients. Now, there's different iterations, but I would say, broadly speaking, two different kinds. And the first kind is those who refuse to control their casual and or crucial longings. I lost the word for a minute. People who refuse to control their casual and their crucial longings. It's what felled Adam and Eve. They saw the fruit. They said, oh my, look at the way the sunlight glints on the dew on that fruit. Oh, I wonder what it tastes like. Oh, I bet it tastes so good. And before you know it, they're eating it. They bounce around from person to person or from pleasure to pleasure and refuse to exercise any sort of discipline with that. The second are all those who will make improvements, small and large, in their lives. They'll be curious, disciplined, hungry for health, focused on an improved future. They've spotted it, they know what it looks like, and they're off to the races. They may not like what they hear, but they know instinctively that it's the way out of those voices and those conditions that make them unhappy. In over 40 years of counseling, I've wanted to say to people whose lives are on the rocks, I can show you the way out, but my bet is that you won't take the cure. You'll believe you are wiser. You'll seek to silence the voices in your head rather than listening to the voices that come from God. You're afraid that you'll break if you use this self-discipline. Oh, I can't do that. That's just too hard. God made you of stronger stuff than that. God made me of stronger stuff than that. The writer of Ecclesiastes said, "Better to have one handful of quietness than two handfuls of hard work and chasing the wind." Do you realize what's needed in order to live that way? I think my judgment on our times is that we have so much conflicting stuff coming in our head that it has made it more and more difficult to live in this way. And I want to encourage you and challenge you to think about the place that crucial longing, you know, that outer circle plays in your life. Or are you more confined to casual and critical longing? Where do you live in that model that I gave you? Crucial, critical, or casual? We probably all got a little bit of all three in us. On the right day, I can be pretty immediate gratification. The right day and the right thing. Let's pray. Dear Father, how we human beings strive, covet, and treadmill throughout our lives. We somehow believe that busy is the best way, that the goal is to have more while actually getting less of the things that make for quietness. I pray for my life springers. So many of them are living frantic lives. And I pray that, and we all are at times. So I pray that you will help us to focus and concentrate on the things that really make difference, that give calmness and peace. Help us to listen and gain a heart of wisdom. In Jesus' name I pray this. Amen.